Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, thanks to Lottie and Dave for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, July 3rd. I am Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Keith Tracy is with us to chat Euro 2024 with the quarterfinals confirmed, and we'll round up the latest League of Ireland transfers. Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray preview a big weekend of ladies football and Camogie Championship quarterfinal action. Damien Lawler brings us the latest Gaelic Games stories, including Henry Shefflin parting ways with Galway and Davy's departure from Waterford, while Shane Stokes dials in to reflect on Stage 5 of the Tour de France as Mark Cavendish makes history. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp the show on 087 187 9200, or you can find us on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company wherever in the world you are tuning in from for this hour of sport on 2FM. Couple of news headlines. First and foremost, we're going to start with Association Football, because Republic of Ireland women's head coach Eileen Gleeson has selected a 26-player squad for the trip to Carrow Road to face European champions England before hosting France in Super Value Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Niamh Fahey, Denise O'Sullivan and Marisa Shiva all return to the squad, while injuries rule out Chloe Mustaki, Tara O'Hanlon, Jamie Finn, Heather Payne and Kira Caruso. The full squad can be found on RTE Sport website. But let's hear from the Republic of Ireland manager Eileen Gleeson.
It's a big challenge. I think every team you see is having it. It's not a window that's typically in the calendar. It's because of the Olympics, but yeah, it brings its challenges. We know we have a lot of players playing in the championship, which meant they finished in the end of April, and then we've obviously got players in WSL that finished the end of May, so it's quite a big off period for the championships players, and a big challenge to have them ready for the spike in intensity and load against teams like England and in France. Then you've got the mix of players who are in active season, and we've also got a mix of players playing at very different levels within those active seasons. So it is a big challenge. We've been linking directly with the players. Our performance lead, so Evie, is providing programmes to all players that are off-season. We work with the clubs. We're trying to encourage and facilitate as much exposure then to football sessions as possible. We did have last week we actually had the girls in for a prep camp. I think you've seen England doing the same, France doing the same in early, because go from nothing to this level of intensity is a lot. So we've had a preparation camp, and then a lot of those championship players now are returning to pre-season this week. Like I said, it's that constant communication, providing programmes, providing the week's camp, and then they're back into active football exposure this week.
Now, don't forget, we will have live comprehensive coverage and live commentary of both of the Irish women's national team matches next Friday, and then Tuesday week as well against England and France respectively. But we're turning our attention to cycling. Cycling journalist with the Velo website, Shane Stokes, joins us on the line because Mark Cavendish broke the Tour de France stage wins record as he took his 35th victory in cycling's greatest race.
It's slightly uphill, and there is Mark Cavendish. There is Mark Cavendish through the centre. He's hit the front here. Mark Cavendish is there. There's a crash behind. Mark Cavendish. This is history. This is history. First there was Max. Now it's Mark Cavendish standing on the shoulders of giants. The Tour de France and the greatest of all time. One record breaker now stands alone. Mark Cavendish has 35 stage wins, more than anybody who ever came before. Most doubted, he believed, a day he and we will never ever forget. The record belongs to Mark Cavendish. We watch, we enjoy, we sit absolutely stunned.
And stunned is an absolutely stunning the way of watch Mark Cavendish weave his way through like days gone by. We haven't seen it for a while. And finally Mark Cavendish elbows out, protected himself all the way, and he just dominated that sprint from even back in 8th, 9th position.
Well, that is some pretty remarkable commentary. Shane Stokes, just put this into context for us there, hearing the excitement of that commentary. Just how big of an achievement is this for Mark Cavendish?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. I just checked, and his first stage win was 2008. So that's 16 years ago. He's now 39 years of age, and he's He was level with Eddie Merckx, cycling's greatest ever rider, and nobody would dispute that Merckx won on all terrain, but Mark Cavendish is absolutely cycling's greatest ever sprinter, and he moved past Merckx today, taking a 35th stage win. So yeah, it's momentous, and usually when he gets on a roll, he'll do it again and again, so don't be surprised if he takes more on this year's tour.
And he done it in dramatic fashion. It was a really, really exciting end to the race.
It certainly was, yeah, because it was really messy, and Ireland's Sam Bennett was trying to take a stage win and was completely outmanoeuvred. He didn't have enough of his team supporting him and was too far back, whereas Cavendish's team, which is completely built around him, unlike Sam Bennett's team, and has been designed around him for this season, had him really in the perfect position going into the finale. And then Cavendish took over, and then he was able to, it's called surf the wave, so he was surfing through the bunch and finding the gaps, and that was down to Cavendish's experience and his skill and also his instinct in terms of who to follow, and it worked out perfectly for him.
Sam will be a little disappointed with how it finished then from an Irish perspective.
Yeah, absolutely, he will be, and I think he'll come back in the days ahead. I think that Cavendish will be on a roll. I think Cavendish will likely take more stage wins, but where Sam would have the edge over Cavendish is on tougher terrain. Mark Cavendish was dropped on the opening stage of this year's tour quite early on, actually, and was a long way back. There was concerns that he might even miss the time cut and be put out of the race, but his team gathered around him and helped him over the hills, so he's not a good climber. Sam is a much better climber, so I think in the tougher days later in the race, Sam... Cavendish will slip back and Sam will have a chance. I mean, he'll certainly try tomorrow, which is the next sprint opportunity, but I do think momentum is on Cavendish's side and he may well prevail tomorrow.
Okay. What's on the cards tomorrow then? Detail it for us, Shane.
Yeah, just another stage. It's an even flatter stage. Today had some hills and had the bunch not taken it as easy, Cavendish could have been under a bit of pressure. It runs from Masson to Dijon tomorrow and it's very flat. And it's absolutely got a bunch of sprints stomped all over it. So I think that's to be expected. And you'll have another exciting finish tomorrow, like today.
Here's hoping. We will be checking in with you tomorrow for the reaction to that. But before I let you go today, Shane, of course, we are in Olympic season. And the Olympic Federation of Ireland has officially selected the women's track cycling team who will compete at the Olympic Games in Paris this summer. The Irish track cycling team has secured qualification in the women's team pursuit, the women's Omnium and the women's Madison following a 2-year competition journey. The track cycling competitions take place on the outskirts of Paris and run from August 6th until the 11th of August. No surprises, but a strong contingent selected here, Shane.
Yeah, no surprises whatsoever. They were precisely the four riders that were expected and have been campaigning for the past few years to qualify. So Mia Griffin, Laura Gillespie, Kelly Murphy and Alice Sharp are the core of the team. And then Erin Creighton will be the, I suppose, the stand-in if anybody gets injured or anything. So Erin is the fifth member of the team, of the squad, and will be there if needed. The team pursuit is obviously the prime goal, and then you've got the other couple of races there. And interestingly, Mia Griffin qualified Ireland for the women's road race, which is obviously not a track event. But because of the timing of the track events, she's very unlikely to take part. So I anticipate that the person to ride the road race will be named in the next few days or certainly in the next week or so. And I suppose the thing to keep in mind is that Ireland still doesn't have a velodrome and they have achieved this amazing qualification despite not having a velodrome. And once there is a velodrome, I think that Irish track cycling will move on to an even greater level again.
Well, here's hoping we continue in the right trajectory. It is a momentous achievement. So very best of luck to all of those athletes that you mentioned there. For now, Shane Stokes, a journalist with the Velo website. Thanks so much for taking the call this evening. We will check in with you tomorrow, as I mentioned, after stage 6 of the Tour de France. We are turning our attention to Gaelic Games.
Game on. GAA.
Now it is time to chat Gaelic Games and RTE Sports. Damien Lawler joins us now. And Damien, a lot to get through this evening, but let us start with some breaking news, actually, just broke before we came on air, and that is Henry Shefflin has left his role as Galway senior hurling manager after 3 seasons. Hurling's most decorated player led the tribesmen to All-Ireland semi-finals in 2022 and 2023. But this year, it's fair to say, it was a bit disappointing after they failed to qualify from the Leinster Championship round robin. Does this news come as a surprise to you, Damien?
No, it doesn't, Shane. I wouldn't say it was as clear-cut as everybody thought. Like, there were members of the the hierarchy in Galway that weren't necessarily looking for change or not necessarily chasing change. But I think the general pulse around the place, maybe both from Henry's own words after the last game, and secondly, maybe from the public in Galway as well, was that maybe this experiment wasn't really going in the direction that they wanted. And was it an experiment? Well, Henry had left a stellar playing career to go into management with Ballyhale Shamrocks, won a Kilkenny, won a, you know, in the Leinster in his first year, won an All-Ireland in his second year, and then fairly quickly stepped forward via the Thomastown Intermediate team. He stepped forward into the Intercounty Breach. Year one went well, and I suppose maybe a Limerick team that Galway had been pushing quite well had maybe drifted out maybe to a 6-9 point defeat then maybe in the second or third year. But really and truly, that game in Salt Hill against Dublin, where, they did have David Burke sent off, which was quite a questionable call on the day too. Questionable in some eyes, but maybe by the rule book it was an offence, okay. But that definitely didn't help their cause. But playing in their own backyard against a Dublin team that really didn't kick on after that result, well, that was probably the nail, you know, that probably sealed Henry's time in Galway. Mm. And I think his words after matches, you could read a lot into it, Shane, and maybe the time had come. A ferocious cross-country drive as well. And for one reason or other, Shane, it hasn't worked out to the extent that neither Galway or Henry Shefflin would want.
Still relatively young and new in his inter-county management career. So do you feel, perhaps not next championship campaign, but we will see Henry back on the sidelines and on the inter-county scene?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like, I mean, as a player, unrivaled, 10 All-Irelands, 11 All-Stars, 581 scored in All-Ireland finals, an average of 7 points in every All-Ireland final he played in, and I think he played in 13 seniors. And I mean, that's the highest bar you can get. Mm. So as a player, he leaves, you know, he left the arena with nothing else to prove, only to himself maybe, because his standards were so high. And how must it be for a lad like him to go to any team, you know, and you expect every player on his books to reach similar standards, you know? And the reality is that not everybody is capable of doing that. Very, very few are. In fact, hardly anybody is. So that's an awful difficult position for Henry to be facing into in any management job. You know, he'll have to probably temper his own expectations and probably shades of what Roy Keane felt as a player compared to what Roy Keane meant as a manager. But I've no doubt Henry's a young man. He's 45, 46. I think the future is anything he wants it to be. There'll be potentially a chance for him to take the Kenny job somewhere down the line. You know, I think internally, a lot of people were surprised in the county that he went to Galway. But Henry knows his own mind. He knows his own path. He was knocking it out of the park as a media analyst as well, Shane, with our own organisation. So, I mean, potentially a route back there as well. I would feel there'd be no shortage of people knocking on Henry's door. But I'd say for now, after 3 years, maybe trekking across countries, a young family, a busy job as well, he'll definitely take time out. I couldn't see him rushing back into it straight away. But I've absolutely no clue what the man himself will do. But the one thing I'd be fairly certain of, be it media or be it management, or be it probably a consultation and role in hurling, he won't be in any shortage of offers, I would imagine.
Okay, plenty of options, no doubt. Galway County Board did confirm that the process to appoint the next Galway manager will be put in place very shortly. Waterford will also be looking for a new hurling manager because Davy Fitzgerald says he wants to prioritise his family for now after stepping down as Waterford hurling manager. The Clare native had another year left on his 3-year term but has decided to step down as Waterford begin the search to find a replacement. Is this the right decision for both parties in how they move forward and develop, I suppose?
Yes, I think so. I think, midway through in the season, you're wondering where the whole Waterford thing was going. Now, they finished off very honourably. Both parties seemed to gel, management and players. They seemed to, let's be honest about it, an unbelievable win against Cork. That draw against Tipperary, that last-minute score, you could see the despair on Davy's face. And Davy's a shrewd hurling man. He was looking probably 2 or 3 steps ahead of the line. He probably knew in his heart of hearts that extra point stopped them from going a stage further, getting out of Munster. And the margins are very, very fine. I was in Semple Stadium, Shane, watching Tipperary versus Cork. But before that game, Clare versus Waterford in Cusick Park was on. And had Waterford got a draw that day, you know, the chances were Cork working through. So the margin, like, I mean, Waterford went to battle down in Enniston. They gave one hell of a go. And then they came up to Limerick and they put in a fine performance against Limerick as well. It took them a while to get going. Possibly they never looked like they were going to win that game. But they got it back to 2 or 3 points at one stage with about maybe 10, 15 minutes left. And that's a very credible performance. So, like, I think the second term with Davey and Waterford, we all know what he did first time around. He wrote himself into their kind of hurling history in the first time around. Second time around, you know, the relationship seemed to meander a little bit, but it definitely, you know, whatever happened in the training camp, they came back a tighter unit and they put in, championship performance they can be really proud of, to be honest with you, after a very, very poor league. So had he decided to stay on, or had they decided that they were going to stay together, you know, they wouldn't have been the strangest call in the world either, but I guess maybe there's a lot of travelling involved there too. And I guess maybe Davey has his own way of playing hurling, his own systems and his own style. And perhaps maybe the players were looking for more room to you know, maybe manoeuvre. I don't know what it is, because Davey always argued that his own systems allow players to express themselves. They invite scorers from all over the field. And I would say the thing about Davey's plan is your skill levels have to be such a high level to get that to work to its full potential. That is a very, very demanding style. But at times, they look so impressive moving through the lines. But if one of the channels breaks down on you, I guess you're going to be overturned, and the way hurling's gone, it's going to be a pint put up at the opposite end very, very quickly. But look, Kamir, I think he can leave with his head held high. Definitely some fine performances this year, and I think maybe it's the best for all parties concerned, because Davey does have a young son now, Davey Og, along with Colm, and his wife Sharon. So I think it's a long journey over from Ennis to there too. And again, you can't imagine Davey will be out of the scene for too long either, there, Shane.
No, not at all. From hurling to football, now the rule trials may be extended as far as October, with feedback aiding the Football Rules Committee. Before I get your thoughts, Damien, we can hear from Colm Nally, a former Meath, Louth and Kildare senior football coach, who was part of the FRC, chaired by Jim Gavin.
We've played our third sandboxing match last week. We had in Abbottstown, we had a 15 against 15, two club teams, one from Kildare Selbridge and one from Dublin Castleknock, played a challenge match under we played four quarters, and they played a lot of the new rules that we're discussing. They trialled them out for us.
What's the feedback like from players after week three of the sandbox games?
The feedback has been excellent. Like, you're basically trialling on the fly, so they're throwing up different questions to us all the time, things that we probably wouldn't have thought of. Like, for instance, this week we were you know, looking at the advanced mark and the pros and cons of the advanced mark, and we were asked a question by a player, what about the defensive mark? Do we get the same sort of provisions that a forward would get if we win the defensive mark? And that's something we didn't really think about. Yeah. You know, so their feedback is fantastic. All the stuff they like, all the stuff they didn't like. For instance, trying the 3v3 inside the 65-metre, one of the players there kept cheating and running out of it and asking questions of us and the referees of what happens if we do that and whatever. So it was brilliant to see sort of the live trials.
The player interaction seems to be very, very consistent and rigorous nearly in the 3 weeks that you've tried. So you're learning an awful lot from the players, Colm. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, without doubt, yeah. And they get it really, really quick. The feedback that we're really getting from the players, and we've had a lot of different players try these, Damien, is they really enjoyed it. They really, really enjoyed it. And they enjoyed the process of having an input in this. They really feel valued. And they've given us great feedback and great food for thought. But the most important thing is that they really feel that it will make the game more enjoyable from a playing point of view, and that's one of our terms of reference, is to make it enjoyable for the players
and to speed it up as well. Again, I guess, Colin, that's a huge thing as well.
Yeah, now again, in Beacon last week we had a couple of instances where we were working on the solo and goal. We had an instance where a player brought his foot up to the ball and tapped the ball while it was in his hands. Something again we hadn't thought about, and we were saying, well, that's not a solo, that's more of a tap. Yeah. So stuff like that, they would be kind of
a rugby lead tap.
Yeah, but the players will kind of interpret, what's the best way for me to do this? Like, it's okay, we would have a sort of unconscious bias of some of these ideas when we're sitting around talking about them, saying this will work, but we wouldn't be thinking of the logistics of how can they even make it quicker. So it definitely, the solo and go speeds it up. One of the things that we're looking at as well is, and one of the values of the association is respect, and one of the things we were looking at the other day is that if you foul the ball, you have to hand the ball to your opponent rather than drop the ball or throw the ball away and stuff like that. And even that was a game changer, because if I hand the ball to you after, say, over carrying the ball rather than leaving it on the ground, you put the ball, you take a solo, you're gone. You're up the pitch, you know, in the flat. It just really changes the whole dynamics. No blanket defence is getting back, no extra defenders. You've made yards straight away.
I can see, like, the, I suppose, the enthusiasm you have for this. In general, how many proposals are under consideration for the sandbox games, Colm? Have you got a number on it?
It's not that we have a, we've a mixture of, say, enhancements and enforcements. So, for instance, there'll be things like taking the free kick from the correct position. So that's not going to really be a rule change, but it's something that we're looking at, like by using the vanishing foam, that the free kick's taken from the correct position.
The tweaks
like that. So. If you combine them, there'd be probably 7 or 8, but there is really only 3 or 4 main ones. Like, and the 3 or 4 main ones you're probably looking at would be the goalkeeping, the solo and goal, the new scoring system, and the possibility of keeping 3v3 up, I think. And I think they're the main ones.
This is a live process the whole way through, isn't it? Like, you're reviewing, monitoring, studying the new data, getting feedback in every weekend almost.
Without doubt. We've got some submissions, 10 and 12 page submissions from people who are so passionate but have brilliant ideas that has kind of shaped some of our views on certain things. So people are still making contact. They can continue to make contact just through the FRC on website or on the GA website. Yeah. Definitely, if new ideas, even these live games that we try, something pops up every week that we were saying, do you know what, we haven't thought of that, and this is a great question. And like, for instance, somebody asked the other day a quite simple question about the kickouts. If the keeper slips and the ball doesn't travel outside the 40 metre arc, stuff like does happen in games. Happens there? So it's live and it's constantly changing.
Well, that's actually a very interesting conversation you had, Damien, there with Colm Nally, as I mentioned, former inter-county senior football coach, part of the FRC. What's the process now going forward? Like, we might see rules even trialled in league games?
Yeah, we see. The interesting thing about this conversation, and I've been on the show many times, and you talk about committee proposals and committee meetings, this is going to be fast-tracked. There's no doubt about that. These guys mean absolute business. And I think that conversation there that I had with Colm was quite technical, but what's going to happen now is you're going to finish off maybe another series of trial games, sandbox games, Shane. They'll finish in July. There's a possibility of some, you know, exciting trials taking place in October as well. I look more into that. That will probably be the last look in terms of playing field that they'll refine their decisions. It'll go to Central Council then. You know, the list, the short list, I guess, that the FRC feel has a really good chance of making a permanent place in the GAA rule book. Central Council will say yay or nay, but I would imagine whatever goes in front of them will be strongly tried out and strongly road tested. Very much lots of weight behind what they've brought to the table at the Central Council. And then it'll go forward to trial in next year's Allianz League. And after 5 Allianz League games, Shane, there is a chance for the FRC to review. Now, they won't be adding anything at that stage, but they'll be reviewing and tweaking. So they'll finish off the league. And effectively, if everything goes well, they'll be cemented into play if the authorities go with it for the GAA Championship. And Jim Gavin's group is making the point that, well, if it wasn't going to be going into the Championship, nobody would give the rural trials due respect or due value during the league. So there's your hook. List has to be shortlisted and finalised by the FRC. You know, the tap and go, the scoring arc, the 3-on-3 and the goalkeeper, they are the main 4 that could get through. Central Council will say yay or nay there. They should go for trial in the Allianz League if they get the yay, and from there then should be cemented into the Championship with a little bit of tweak and review. So that's the process now, Shane.
Okay. Damien, before I let you go, the Gaelic Players Association says it has seen encouraging developments in its relationship with GAA, with the leadership of new GAA President Jarla Burns, but insists that it will tackle several key challenges this year. Ultimately, am I right in saying the GPA oppose any extension of the season?
Yeah, and you're right. And like, I mean, this is why, again, just this last topic that we covered with Colm Nally, that's going to come into play for the 2025 season, Shane. 2025 is going to be like, it's going to be really, really interesting. So we're going to see potential playing rule changes on the field. Are we going to see changes to the season structure? Jarla Burns has come out very, very strongly and said, yeah, we're looking for a change to the format, maybe push it back by 2 weeks. But the CCCCC, the Central Competitions Control Committee, don't necessarily go along with that. So there is a small little bit of resistance there at boardroom level to what Jarla wants. And now the GPA have come out and said, well, we do not want any extension through the inter-county season, which is probably 8 months of the year at the moment, including pre-season and finishing up maybe in August. We don't want any extension to that. 83% of the GPA membership is happy with the way things are. So while a lot of the rest of the stakeholders might feel it needs to be pushed out 2 weeks, Shannon, I possibly do myself, because I find that even leaving aside my job as a GEA follower, there's little chance to sit down and review games, and you can tell where teams are absolutely flat on the field, having been, you know, out in action for 3 or 4 weeks on the trot. But that said, the club status does deserve its respect as well. I think big decision now for the GPA. They want pre-season to be gone, and I think they want certain other instances, like a bigger gap between league and championship. So it's very hard to have a bigger gap between league and championship and not extend the season. So I think the GPA probably are looking for something that possibly can't be delivered on that front. But in terms of staying within the split season structure as is, they're happy enough with that. An interesting thing too, the GPA had this AGM this week, and they probably didn't get involved in any questions or any speculation that they will be looking for a cut of the GEA's gate receipts. They currently get 15% of the GEA's sponsorship and media income, but I think, with the model, sponsorship model has fallen, so their revenue is down about 500,000 in that regard. You know, it'll be interesting to see how they approach their model going forward as well. But certainly for now, they're not getting involved in any discussions about looking for a cut of the gate receipts. And secondly, they don't want any extension of the split season. They maintain their players are under enough pressure for too long as it possibly is without the season being extended. So 2025 is going to be really interesting on a number of fronts, Shane.
It most certainly is. It's going to be a wild 2025. We've still got football and hurling semi-finals to be previewing as well. We will be previewing the hurling semi-finals in detail on Friday's show. But for now, Damien Lawler, pleasure as always. Thanks so much for taking the call. Now, Nadine Doherty is with us because it's a big weekend of Ladies Football Championship action. Nadine, how are you?
I'm great, Shane. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very well, thank you. We have four quarterfinals and we've a relegation playoff as well to mention as this weekend. But let us just dive straight in and start chronologically. So at 1:15 on Saturday in Super Value Porky Quive, Cork will play Waterford. All signs pointing towards a Cork win here.
Yeah, I would feel that, Shane. They've been particularly impressive in their group games. I suppose Waterford had a big win over Donegal. You know, I expected Donegal to win that game, but Waterford were very hungry. They were very well set up. They took their scores. Very physical. Waterford were extremely physical, as were Cork against Galway, and there, I suppose that was their best win in the group.
Surprisingly
game.
Physical?
No, I always find Waterford bring a brilliant physical piece to their game. Cork are always physical around the middle as well. They have a very good middle structure there. You know, Marie O'Callaghan, their captain, she's a really good physical player, very mobile, and she kind of sets the tempo. And I just felt Cork went into that Galway game knowing that they had to bring something different to get over Galway, because I feel football and ability wise Galway would have the edge there, but Cork just dominated them. They dominated them all over the pitch in terms of physicality. So I do expect this to be a bruising encounter, if you could say that. But, you know, Cork beat Waterford in Munster, and I know Waterford, they won't be looking near that result, but it does play a little bit of a part. And I just think Cork are coming, they're coming good at the right time. I expect them to get over this. I expect them to get over it easily enough, to be honest, because I think their tails are up in Cork, and I think they fancy their chances to go. They possibly will play Dublin in the next round, but I just think with them as well, you know, they have the edge around the middle, as I said. They play a really nice running game that's getting into the loop now, and I think they have options on the bench, Shane, and I think that's the difference, whereas Waterford possibly only have one or two changes that they can make to have an impact in the game. But I mean, Cork were bringing on Hannah Looney there in their last game to change things up. She's a multiple All-Star. She could start this week. I don't think she will. I think they'll spring her off the bench again. And a big aspect of Cork's game as well, it's Melissa Duggan and Derek Kiley, who they're really good runners from deeply defensive structure. Okay. Melissa from cornerback and Derek Kiley from wing back. So look, I just think they've too much running game, too physical, and they should be not relying on Katie Quirk that much. You know, we've spoken about her a lot over the league. They seem to have their forwards running a little bit better. So yeah, I'd fancy them big time.
Okay, that one, as I mentioned, throws in at 1:15. At 5:15 in Austin Stack Park, Tralee, Kerry host Meath. Now, Kerry are favourites. However, we speculated a couple of weeks ago, Nadine, Vicky Wall has returned to the Meath panel. So has that closed the gap somewhat? Kerry's still favourites, but
yeah,
how much of a difference would that make?
I don't know. I mean, listen, it's Vicky Wall. We talk about Hannah Looney, multiple All-Stars. Vicky Wall's the same. People could argue she's been out of the game for the guts of a year. She hasn't been training with Meath. You know, Vicky Wall will bring Vicky Wall's game to Meath, regardless of who the opposition is. we talk about strong runners. She's the strongest runner on the ball in the country, I think, when she's in full flow. I think Meath, it's where they put her, perhaps. Mm. And I don't think they have to worry about her performance. It's perhaps those around her and how she'll fit into how they play. I don't know if they'll start her, but I think if she is coming on, she'll be coming on very early. It's great for the game, Shane. Listen, like, here we are talking about her. You know, I'm smiling. It's kind of, you know, it's a bit of showtime. You know, herself and Emma Duggan were the key core elements of that Meath team when they were going well. Emma Duggan, brilliant performance the last day against Tip. She's coming into her own. The dynamic duo, as you say, are back together. I still think Kerry will and should, you know, listen, Kerry have all Ireland aspirations. They should be winning this game. I suppose it's just giving them something to think about. You know, do Kerry go with what they've been doing all year in terms of a zonal defence, or do they now make a plan, essentially, what will we do if Vicky Wall comes on?
Could it affect me negatively if they just rip up the playbook now and change, or do they need to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's, you know, my fear for Meath would be you have a lot of young players in there. It's their first year starting. You look at Marion Farrelly, the last day, got player of the game. She scored, I think, 2-1 or 2-2. Brilliant young player. You have Ciara Smith there. They're just getting into championship football now. You might have a fear that they might look at it, you know, oh, well, Vicky's back. And, you know, they could, you know, they're impressionable young players. Yeah. So they might feel, well, she's back. We'll let her take the ball. We'll put it on her. Inadvertently, they won't be thinking that. But that can happen sometimes, especially when you have somebody on a team whose the main part of their game is power running. Mm. You do have younger players. They do have a tendency to, they don't know what to do, essentially. Yeah. You know, so I suppose there is a bit of a danger in that. But Vicky's such a good finisher and she draws frees. I wouldn't call her a greedy player. To be honest, she's very good at bringing players in around her. So I feel if those young players can, I suppose if they don't get overwhelmed by the presence of Vicky, then she's only an asset either way.
Yeah,
that's what I feel. And as I said before, her relationship on the field with Emma Duggan is spectacular. So they link up. But yeah, look, Kerry, they look quite comfortable. They had that sticky draw against Donegal and Balbuffet at the start of the year. They had a big win over Waterford. Again, brilliant up front, spread of scorers up front. My worry still is, why is Louise Nevere-Hertig not playing all the time? I still think if they're going to win in All-Ireland, she has to play the whole game this week. I hope she does. She just needs that game time behind her. But yeah, look, Kerry are favourites, but I think it's going to be a really, really good game. I think it's probably going to be the game of the weekend, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, I just think they're two entertaining teams. Meath are getting back to that lovely style of football. And I think Vicky being there will bring out a crowd, so it'll be a good one.
Okay, well, if you're around the Tralee area, get down to
absolutely
that one, 5:15. All the matches will be shown live on TG Cahir. It's important to mention as well. 7:30 on Saturday in Parnell Park, Dublin Galway. Galway quietly confident, although you are coming up against a very potent Dublin team.
Yeah, Saturday Night Lights. What Galway will show up, Shane? I don't know. If it's the Galway who have beaten Dublin a couple of times in the league over the last few years, then we'll have a brilliant game. If it's the Galway who we've seen over the last couple of games, then Dublin will win this comfortably. It is difficult to see anything other than a Dublin win. I just think that Dublin's full forward line, Carla Rowe, Kate Sullivan, Hannah Turrell, I just don't see the Galway full back line dealing with them at all. For me, you know, Galway's team selection has been, it's been funny for the championship. Shauna Hines there, she's been brilliant. I thought she was really excellent in the league. She played a brilliant running game for them. She gave them a great drive. She didn't start the other day against Cork, which I was surprised about, and then when she came on, she gave them a bit of a lift. So again, depending on what team Galway line out with, and also depending on what way Galway set up, I think they have to go toe to toe with Dublin. They have nothing to lose here. They're not favourites by any means. If they sit back, which they have a tendency to do, and if they try and soak up Dublin pressure and go on the break, just like Mayo did, Dublin will just sit on that all day and they'll catch you on the break and they'll wear you down. And you're in the game with 50 minutes gone and you're 3 or 4 points down, and the next thing, 5 minutes later, you look at the scoreboard and you're 10 points down. So I hope Galway go toe-to-toe. I hope they press the Dublin kick out.
Do you think they will be brave enough?
I... Yeah, I think they should be.
I suppose it comes back to what Galway shows up.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they have the players to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do. But that you'd hope that that over-reliance on Nicola Ward from centre-back is absent. If Galway come together and they do go toe-to-toe, you know, they'll press Dublin and they'll put them to the pin of their collar. But I just think the flow that Dublin are in at the minute, and they're just peaking nicely. Either way, I think they'll get over Galway. But Galway do have the potential to give them a massive game.
Okay. Those three matches are on Saturday. On Sunday then, 5:45 in the Athletic Grounds in Armagh, it is Armagh against Mayo. What catches your eye about this fixture?
Yeah, probably the tightest fixture, I feel. I could see this swinging either way. If Mayo win, which I feel they could, they do have the potential to cause an upset, because Armagh are probably a lot of people's favourites. But the thing with Mayo, I feel, you know, if Mayo are allowed to play by their own management, I think they're in with a chance. You know, Liam McHale has come in. He's very much, not that the ship needed to be steadied, but he kind of kept a bit of a flow there. But as the season has gone on, I just feel he hasn't moved away from that set up like a men's team. You know, they're very deep defensively. It's a very slow transition to attack. Mayo, for the last 2 or 3 years, I loved watching them because they kicked the ball, they gave it in straight away. Now it's very slow, there's very little kicking. I just don't think he's getting the best out of them. So if they don't throw off the shackles and let the girls play football, I think Armagh could sneak it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, like, you look at Armagh, I think if Caroline O'Hanlon doesn't play, I think they'll struggle big time. I expect that she will, but they, as we said before, you know, they haven't recovered from Amy Mackin's injury or absence. But if Mayo throw off the shackles, they definitely have the potential to get over them.
Okay, won't be much between
the
sides. No, it'll
be very tight, Shane. Yeah.
Regardless. And the semi-final pairings, we do know the winner of Kerry and Meath will play Armagh Mayo, and the winner of Cork Waterford will play Dublin or Galway. The semi-finals will be played in Tullamore on Saturday, July 20th. I mentioned also there's relegation playoffs, there's relegation qualifiers on Saturday. Kingspan Breffni hosts Donegal and Kildare at 2 p.m. and then Laois and Tipperary in John Locke's GAA club in Callan, also at 2 p.m. as well. The winners of the fixtures will play senior football next year. The losers then will play off against each other, with the losers of this fixture then relegated to intermediate football for 2025. So looking at those matches, Donegal Kildare and Laois Tipperary, who will be guaranteed senior football next year come this weekend?
I think I really fancy Tipperary to get over Laois. I think that Tip, out of those four teams, have probably played the best football over the last few weeks. Donegal Kildare, it's a toss of a coin, Shane, to be honest.
Really, that
yeah,
close?
Yeah, like I, Donegal have just dipped over that Waterford game was a huge disappointment. I'm going to go Kildare, to be honest, because every time I tip Donegal, they lose. So I'm going to go Kildare and Tip to survive this weekend, and then Donegal to get over Laois. I just think that Laois have been way, way off the pace, and they definitely be favourites to be relegated to intermediate, and I think they'd be happy enough with that for a bit of rebuilding. But yeah, I hope Donegal get over it. But as I said, I'll tip Kildare.
Wise. We shall see how all that plays out. We'll be reviewing it next Wednesday. For now, in the Dean Doherty, thanks so much for popping in.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, Tipperary and Cork top their respective groups in the senior grade and will head straight to the All-Ireland Camogie semi-finals in Nolan Park on July 27th, where they will meet the winners of the quarter-finals this weekend. The teams who will play in the quarter-finals are Kilkenny, Dublin, Galway and Waterford. Kilkenny play Dublin this Saturday, July 6th at 12:30 as part of a doubleheader in Croke Park before the meeting of Kilkenny and Clare in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship semi-final. Galway will play Waterford the following day, this Sunday at 1:30, before Limerick take on Cork in the second of the Senior Hurling semi-finals. Aoife Murray is with us to preview both semi-finals. However, Aoife, before we preview both semi-finals, as I mentioned there, due to the results last weekend, Tipperary and Cork topped their respective groups. Tipperary with a 15 points win over Kilkenny, and Cork had a bit of a handsome victory at home to Galway. So what stood out, what impressed you most from last weekend and those set of results?
I suppose, look, starting with Cork and Galway, like, look, I just about tipped Cork to get their noses out in front last weekend, but they certainly did more than that. I think that probably was nearly the result of the weekend. But I think One, I was really happy with how Cork went about their business, but two, you nearly flip it and just actually try to understand or even digest Galway's performance. I think that probably was nearly the biggest surprise. And it's nearly a hard one to fully digest, because immediately you'd go to, oh, you know, Galway were poor, they didn't turn up, they didn't get, I suppose, their game going. But equally, I think looking at how Cork went about their business, I don't think they ever really allowed them to get that much of a momentum in the game. And Cork looked extremely fluid at how they were playing the ball, partially through the lines, but being able to mix it where they played it out wide, really stretched Galway's defence. And even when there was two Cork versus three Galway, they were able to create those opportunities. And in actual fact, could have came away with a couple of more, I suppose, goals and points. Certainly in the first half, I'd say, like Orla Callan, when she looks back at that first opportunity, she'll absolutely try to bury it the next time. I think looking at those few things, you'd say, you know, Cork were absolutely value for their money. But, you know, for me, Galway just got the whole day wrong. Huge amount of learnings, even how far they sat so deep and left Mallon up there all on her own. And even the ball they tried to play into Mallon, sometimes the high ball in, like, you're asking a huge amount of a person to try and win that ball. And numerous occasions she was 1v3, 1v4, and they were still beating the ball in. At one stage, she was in there, I think, with three players, and the Galway player played it across field. Laura Hayes got the ball and the ball went up the field. So, you know, it was one team performing really well and another team not really knowing what kind of a style of game they were trying to play.
Okay. Sticking with Galway, we're not going to go chronological order just because you were chatting about Galway there. Sunday 1:30 then, Galway-Waterford. How will they approach this match with Waterford? Will it be a different approach? How much will they need to raise their performance levels as well?
I think, look, they're going in a real tricky position because you only have a week. Well, not really even a week. They're lucky, I think, they're on the Sunday. So they're lucky they're getting that extra day because, you know, to try and figure out, one, I suppose, the fact that players didn't look as sharp. Is there not a whole lot you can do in 6 or 7 days to work on that? They looked quite flat. So, you know, I think they're going to go in this weekend in quite a tricky position because you've got Waterford, who have been steadily, I think they were a real steady challenger throughout the championship. Even looking at a few of the other players who've really come to the fore for Waterford, like Mairead O'Brien, I think that's taken a little bit of pressure off the usual three, being Carton, Rocket and Bray. So I think they're going to be in a very sticky position this weekend. If they don't come out and don't come out the blocks really quickly, then I think you could have the opportunity of a little bit of a, I suppose you nearly call it an upset with Waterford potentially getting into the front. They have to come out strong because they need to get confidence into how they're playing ASAP.
Okay. On Saturday then, 12:30, Kilkenny Dublin, as I mentioned, Tipperary beat Kilkenny last weekend. The Dubs had a big win over Down, probably expected, to be fair. You'd imagine, though, Kilkenny would have too much for Dublin. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's a fair statement, right? But, you know, Dublin have had quite a seesaw of a championship, haven't they? You know, they went out, bet Waterford, really good game for them, showed a huge potential and a really nice way of playing. But certainly they were very comfortable with the style that they were playing. And then they went out the following week against Cork and got hammered, you know? So you're kind of going, geez, it almost depends on which Dublin shows up. I know that we can say that about the same with Kilkenny, right? But I think for Dublin, they could be serious challengers and put serious pressure on Kilkenny if the team that played Wexford shows up. Okay. And I think that's where they could, a bit like Waterford, if Kilkenny show any bit of weakness, any bit of lack of concentration, then they could potentially do it. Now, in saying that, I said the same about Dublin when they were playing Cork, and that didn't necessarily... work for them. You know, Kilkenny potentially being down, Miriam Walsh, I think, is a huge one for them. I have a huge amount of time for Walsh. She caused me enough headaches over the years, for sure. But, you know, I think that could be a huge loss for them. But I think for Kilkenny, where they're at, getting through to the semi-final, I know nobody in Kilkenny hates or likes anybody saying they're in a rebuilding phase. I genuinely do think they are, and there's nothing wrong with that. Getting to a semi-final, I think, would be a good would be a good result from the championship, but I really do think they a bit like Galway, need to come out of the blocks fairly lively.
Okay, well, there's not going to be much between any teams in these contests. For now, Aoife Murray, thanks so much for taking the call. Kilkenny Dublin, as I mentioned, Saturday, 12:30, Galway Waterford, Sunday at 1:30. We'll be reviewing those matches in detail next week. We're taking a short break, then we're chatting soccer with Keith Tracy.
Game on. Football.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat football in the company of Keith Tracy. And Keith, we now know the quarterfinals of Euro 2024 on Friday. Spain will play Germany at 5 p.m. 8 p.m. Portugal play France, and then on Saturday England face the Swiss and the Dutch take on Turkey. England, Switzerland at 5 p.m. Netherlands, Turkey at 8 p.m. Last night's matches though, that save, is it the greatest save you've ever seen in football, Keith?
It was a very, very good save. I wasn't too sure what to think. As soon as the Austrians, I think it was Baumgartner gets the header in there, it was a wonderful save. I jumped down my seat thinking we're destined for penalties here.
And happy days after a cracker of a match.
It was a really good match. And sometimes, you know, you look at Romania and Netherlands thinking maybe that's going to be a better game, and then you're thinking Austria, Turkey, am I a little bit tired of the Euros here? Will I turn over? But it was a brilliant game. I thought Austria would get themselves back into it. I know the Turkish did really, really well. Some fantastic young players in their team. But I thought Austria under Ralf Rangnick are a tough, tough team to be very rarely get turned over. So brilliant for the Turks. They're very heavily backed over there, and it's great to see them back at the top table in European football.
They looked absolutely shattered. I don't know how they're going to recover for Saturday. Just the defensive display, it was proper backs against the walls, digging in. Everyone at the end, they weren't even celebrating, it was just bodies dropping to the floor across the pitch.
And that's exactly it. When you're a manager, you tell, especially when you're an underdog, you tell your team, go out there and leave everything on the pitch. And you can tell that the Turkish boys after the game, you know, most of them lying down, didn't too tired to go and celebrate the win, really. But that's exactly what you want, and I'm sure they will roll into the next game with heavy legs, but will be easy enough to get themselves back up for it.
Cramp a plenty as well. Now, they did actually, to be fair, that brilliant celebration, all joining in the centre circle, I think I saw as well, and getting the crowd going, because they do have some following over in Germany as well. We mentioned on the show yesterday the Netherlands hitting form at the right time, a comfortable enough win as well. They will play Turkey as well, but would you agree hitting form at the right time and wouldn't look too much into the group performances as such?
I think the Dutch are hitting form, but there's something about the Dutch. It's probably the striking talent that they have. I like Gakpo, I like Dupuy. You start looking at Weghorst and Bergwijn. I'm not too sure about the goals in there. Defensively, I think they're off the charts. They're probably the envy of most with the amount of defenders you have. Van Dijk, Gakpo, Van de Ven, De Ligt, just to name a few. Brilliant defensively. In midfield, solid enough, but I think they'll do enough to get past the Turks, and then I think they'll either get Italy or Switzerland. More than likely the Swiss, the way the English are carrying on these days. But I think at the top end of European football, the Dutch will be found out, but I think they're just a level behind the elite at the minute, and I think it's just the top end of the pitch. I don't think a lot of people fear Memphis Depay. I know Gakpo has hit a bit of form, but Depay in particular, when he's the spearhead of that attack, I don't think the biggest centre-halves in the world really fear him. I don't think Rudiger, for instance, would be thinking Memphis Depay today, this is going to be a tough day. And he always turns up for the Dutch Memphis, but I just don't see him having the firepower, or the Dutch having the firepower to go all the way.
You mentioned they're kind of a bit below the kind of world class of it. You could probably say this is the same thing about all the teams in performances overall in the last 16.
The only two teams that have really impressed me go head to head on Friday, the Spanish and the Germans, for me have been the standouts. Obviously Austria were very impressive as well, but they've left the tournament. So the Spanish and the Germans, the two most impressive for me. When you look at the Germans, a lot of people didn't really give them much of a hope in terms of going to win the tournament, but I think people, if they get past the Spanish, will be thinking these Germans will be heavily tipped. 10 goals scored, only 2 conceded in the 4 games so far. So really, really good. I keep harping on about the spine of their team, and that's because with Manuel Neuer, Toni Kroos, Gundogan, Havertz, and I think Fulcro could be the difference against the Spanish. I think the Spanish and the Germans are quite similar in the fact defensively really good, in the middle of the pitch really good, up the top. Morata's probably not somebody you really fancy in terms of a Spanish striker. Havertz, I'm an Arsenal fan, but he's not somebody I particularly fancy in terms of scoring goals. But I can see Fulcro coming on for the last 20 minutes, maybe pulling out to Danny Carvajal for balls into the box, or maybe Mark Cucurella, and just going a little bit old school, and the Germans just eking a horrible win out that way.
Okay. Well, hopefully it is entertaining football, and there's not too much eking out wins in a turgid fashion. We have a text, ask Keith about Ronaldo crying. Would Keith do it? We had a debate yesterday. I was outnumbered by Ruby, by Paul Curry, by Mark Langdon as well. They were all saying it was ridiculous. I said, no, we shouldn't be berating him for it, berating him for his on-field antics and what he'd done on the pitch, but perhaps not after. What did you make of the whole situation?
I found it a little bit refreshing, I have to be honest. I know people were saying it was a joke. I know Didi Haman really went in hard on him, but when a man has done so much in his career, over 200 appearances for Portugal, so many games played in the Premier League and the Liga, so many trophies won, so many millions in the bank, you would imagine he'd be a bit nonchalant when he misses that penalty and think, does it really matter in the grand scheme of things? But the fact that he starts crying, there's a bit of something there. He still cares about it. And like I say, when you have that amount of money in their back pocket and you know it's hard to get out of bed in the mornings when you have silk sheets, but Ronaldo gets up every time and he turns up and he misses the penalty in the 105th minute. 15 minutes later, he goes and scores a penalty again against a very good goalkeeper in All Black, a big, big goalkeeper. So it was a brilliant thing for me, not in terms of the crime, but the way he bounced back and said, give me the ball, I'll take a penalty. And I think if that's anybody else in world football, you may be thinking about taking him off because he gets so emotional. You're thinking, can he still play at the level? Should he take a penalty in the penalty shootout? But the fact that it's Ronaldo, he goes and does it. And I was delighted for him because I know he probably splits opinion in the way he acts off the pitch, but he's a footballing legend. He's a Portuguese legend. He's somebody that a lot of young footballers look up to. My son is 5 years old. He runs around in Sherry Street and they talk about they want to be El Nasir when they play in the five-a-sides, and they're thinking, why? And you think, Ronaldo. This boy has inspired so many people to play football, so many little girls to play football. I didn't want that to be his last contribution to Portuguese football. So the fact that it hasn't is brilliant. And I fancy the French against the Portuguese, but I think Ronaldo will have a good game and give them a little bit of a scare.
Okay. I doubt there were too many Saudi shirts when you were growing up in Sherifert. Yeah.
Very few.
It's changed. Listen, before we go, I know you won't mention it, so I will for you. Your father-in-law, avid listener to Game On, Gerry Fay, big football fan, 85th birthday today.
85th birthday today, Gerry. Yeah, he's absolutely flying. We have the birthday cake out. Got him a little birthday balloon, some socks and slippers that I think every father gets these days when it turns into their birthday. So happy birthday, Gerry, and I'll see you in a few minutes when I go home.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Keith, you get out the gap. We'll let you go. Get back to the birthday parties and the celebrations. Thanks so much for popping in. We will be previewing. I did mention we're going to chat League of Ireland transfers with Keith. We've ran out of road though, and we will be previewing all of tomorrow night's fixtures with Graeme Gartland and Rebecca Cray on tomorrow's show, and we will be chatting transfers as well. Better the Silva is up next on 2FM. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Laurie Davis for working on this evening's show. I'll chat to you tomorrow at 6. From all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.